Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Coe back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a good time of the year on the sports calendar. Welcome back. Final hour of Ben and Woods.
It is a good time of year.
It is.
Yeah, college football starting.
College football week one this week after the week zero games earlier. Got the golf playoffs wrap up this weekend with the Tour Championship. Good luck to friend of the program, Xander Schauffele, who will start in second place. Remember, it's the staggered start. So Scotty Scheffler, who's number one in the FedEx Cup standings, is at 10 under to start the tournament. Xander Schauffele is at 8 under to start the tournament in second place. Then Hideki Matsuyama will be third at 7 under. And Keegan Bradley, who won this weekend at the BMW Championship, which was a pretty cool story, actually, Woods. He'll start fourth at 6 under. Keegan Bradley was the last player to get into last week's tournament. Only the top 50 made it in, and he was at 51, and he was done with the FedEx St. Jude Championship. His round was over, so his season was over until Tom Kim finished bogey, double bogey, bogey to drop out of the top 50 and put Keegan Bradley in at number 50. And then he used that opportunity. Went last week, won the tournament in Colorado at a course that was over 8,100 yards long, but with the elevation, they were like hitting the ball 400 yards off the tee, and won the tournament, and now he's got a legitimate shot to win the entire FedEx. Now, remember, he's the Ryder Cup captain year at Bethpage Black, and probably played his way onto the President's Cup team as well, which is coming up in Montreal here in a few weeks. He'll certainly be a top captain selection for that tournament coming up. So you got the golf. Obviously, the NFL season starts next Thursday.
Yeah, next Thursday.
The preseason's over, though, so they got the kickoff game with the Chiefs taking on. Who are the Chiefs playing in the first game this year?
I don't even know.
They've got the Thursday night opener in Kansas City. And then Friday night next week, they're playing in Sao Paulo, Brazil, that second game. And then the first full weekend Sunday games with the Red Zone and everything kicking off a week from Sunday. So. And then, of course, baseball pennant races. And
it's crazy that
it's a busy time on the sports calendar right now.
I mean, you know, this is the year of the playoffs in college football.
Ravens and Chiefs.
That'll be a good one. This is, you know, the expanded playoffs this year. You've already had a top 10 team go down.
Chiefs-Ravens.
Yeah, we just said that.
It's fine. He was looking it up.
He was asking me. I looked it up.
Ravens, by the way. Top 10 team already goes down in Florida State. But yeah, man, you got 12 teams basically competing this year.
But you know what's great about that? Florida State, remember last
year? They're
not dead. They won all their games. They didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now they can lose, get bodied.
Yes.
Still come back, win their conference, and go to the playoffs.
Correct.
12-team playoffs.
You're not dead.
You shouldn't have a system where you lose one week in Dublin, Ireland, and your season is over.
Over.
Which last year, if they did this last year,
it was over.
Their season
was over anyway.
Was actually over. It was over even though they won every
game.
We didn't know it at the time, but it turned out their season was over before it even started. Because you're Florida State, you win every game, and you can't even get into the playoff. That's a problem. That's a problem for any school.
I'm excited about it, man.
So new format, I think, is exciting for college football, and it's just a better. People go, I do not understand the argument. You know, you're cheapening the regular season by making 12 playoff games. No, you're not. If Florida State was out of it, you just made their next 11 games meaningless and irrelevant.
Literally.
Now, they still have tons to play for. That enhances the value of your regular season, doesn't cheapen it at all.
100%. It's not baseball. You know what I mean? It's different. It's different entirely. And now, like you said, you go and win your conference, you get into the playoffs.
Now, it was a conference loss.
It was a conference loss.
Which is a tough way to start the season, but you can still come back.
Absolutely.
One is possible.
Absolutely.
I doubt Georgia Tech's going unbeaten all the way through.
No, they're not.
So, anyway, that's some of the things going on right now in the world of sports. For some other headlines, let's turn things over to Pauly and the Rindle Report.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report,
with Paul Reindel.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, Biatch?
It's the Reindel Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a
All right.
Boom.
Just wanted to congratulate you guys. I think we have once again made sports radio history. The only radio show in America to have not brought up CeeDee Lamb and his lockout ending contract extension.
And I can't say his name without saying CeeDee's nuts every time. I'm 6 years old at heart. Congratulations to the Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb, for that big old deal.
4 years, $136 million deal. That will that'll end a lock holdout right
there. Yeah, holdout. Yep.
And that makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history.
Wow.
You can't even compare quarterbacks with other players anymore because they make so much money. Who's one? Justin Jefferson?
Yes.
Is one.
$35 million a season.
CeeDee Lamb is two.
He was looking at the fifth year of his. It was an option of his rookie contract. He was scheduled to make $18 million.
He wanted a new deal.
Yeah. And
Jerry Jones provided.
Yes, he did.
I don't follow ton of the NFL, but I know Jerry Jones was asked about it pretty much every day, and he seemed like I'm not worried about it. Not worried about the holdout. We're gonna get this done. He not going anywhere.
He actually said, "There it was, glory hole," is what he said.
There it was, glory hole.
Coming to the office on Monday.
Spanking himself.
There it was. Glory hole. One of the greatest drops of all time.
He's not the only Cowboy who needs to get paid. Dak Prescott also needs a new deal. Doesn't have one yet.
Yep.
Will that be next, or did they just give all their money to CeeDee Lamb?
I think the Dallas Cowboys will be fine. They're going to need to do some roster manipulation, though. As all teams in the NFL do. You have to get very creative. Capology and all that is very creative in the NFL. I don't pretend to know anything about it.
Jerry's still technically their GM as
He's
well.
He's still technically alive as well. So
it's the owner and the GM. You don't see that much. I mean, that's
There's
rare
a reason
sports.
For it.
Al Davis did it.
There's a reason
Jerry
for it.
Does it. I mean, if you bought a baseball team,
I would turn over the reins.
You would not want to GM it yourself.
I would turn over.
You know
over,
baseball. You know ball.
Bro, I'm not at that level. I would turn over every bit of the reins. I would sit in my
suite. You would not
suite.
Meddle at all.
No, no meddle. I would be down there.
Really? If you were the owner.
If I was the owner?
You wouldn't meddle at all.
No, unless you would consider hanging out and slapping butts, meddling. I would be down there like hugging my players, saying what's up to the guys, but I would not meddle in like the decision making. Ever. Because I'd hire somebody that could do it.
But you'd set a budget, at least.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my budget would be whatever I could afford. Like, if whatever you can spend, spend. But I would not meddle in the game, the day-to-day
curious
decisions.
How many, like, NFL owners really do meddle with their team. I'm thinking, like, I started thinking about owners, I was thinking NBA owners, like Steve Ballmer and Mark Cuban. Those are very colorful guys, they're very energetic, and you see them all the time, but I wonder how much they actually meddle.
In basketball and football, you got the essentially hard salary cap sports. So you're not even setting a budget, really. You're giving someone full authority just to put together the roster based on how much they're allowed to spend. In baseball, the owner at least has to come in and authorize, all right, we can spend a little more for this guy, or I want to keep it at this level. I mean, the owner has to say something about
both ends of the spectrum in baseball, whether it's Steve Cohen, Peter Seidler types, or
John Fisher,
Dick Manfart.
Yeah.
They do set the tone for their organization more than I would think an owner in the NBA or NFL does.
100%. I think you'd like to think that you wouldn't, but I also don't think it's bad if you're the owner to check in with your manager once a month and say, hey, what's going on with this guy? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's meddling.
No, Peter Seidler did it well.
Yeah, he did.
Check-ins and all the time. Just conversations about life.
I also wouldn't disappear. I'm not the Mariners ownership where
I'm in Japan.
We write the check and I'm done. Like, send me my checks. I would be involved because I would love the team. I wouldn't buy anything unless I didn't love it. Love it.
Not
for that price, right. Even knowing what you can make back, I still wouldn't, and what its valuation would be. I mean, I would absolutely have to love something to buy it.
All right, moving on.
Those t-shirts you buy sometimes late at night.
Which t-shirt?
Which is the one that you were wearing last week that you bought on Ambien?
Which one?
I don't know. You have so many.
I have so many Ambien purchases.
Yes. Yeah. So you didn't have to love it to buy it. You either have to love it,
or you have to be
on Ambien.
On Ambien to get it. Yes, that's exactly right.
I just bought a baseball team on Ambien.
Good luck. All right. So in college sports, we're still kind of navigating the NIL life that we now live in. It's just getting crazier every day. I was reading a story yesterday about how the headline was like how Ohio State built their $20 million championship or bust team, and just all the money that goes in to the NIL. But what I hadn't really thought about was how NIL also is trickling down into high school sports. There is a mom in North Carolina. Maybe she's listening. We're very big in North Carolina. And her son has committed to play for Tennessee. He's a quarterback. Okay. He is the number 32 ranked player in ESPN's junior class, and he's the number 4 passer in his class. And she is suing the state of North Carolina, saying that they put in a rule that high school kids cannot profit off of their name, image, or likeness, in which he's had several opportunities as a high school player already. And she is arguing, or her attorney is arguing, that NIL was put in place to promote athletes and allow them to cash in on their success so far, and it's not allowing high school students to make any money.
I would like them to be able to promote a cash in on his NIL Little League.
I think she's got a case.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
They adopted this policy in June, which blocks public school athletes from making money through the use of their name, image, and likeness.
Was there ever even a rule? The only rule against it in high school was that if you were taking money in high school, you couldn't get a college scholarship anymore. But now there's NIL in college, there shouldn't be anything stopping high school kids from taking advantage of their name, image, and likeness.
Right.
Like, her attorney says the State Board of Education was asked to create rules allowing public high school athletes to use their NIL. It was not empowered to ban it. We look forward to correcting the State Board's error and to help our client benefit from the incredible value and opportunities his hard work and commitment have created for his name, image, and likeness.
I mean, in high school sports, you already have, you know, private schools that recruit top athletes to come and play. That's been going on forever. There's no change. So, you know, if someone wants to also have them sponsor their tractor dealership or something, then I guess they can do that if they wanted to. I don't know what the return is. I mean, are you going to buy something because a high school football player is endorsing it, Woods?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
So I don't know where. There's a ton of market for this.
Well, hang on, though. All right, so the Irish have a kid that's still in high school. Deuce Knight is one of their recruits. And he was showing all his stuff. I'm like, if he had a t-shirt, I would buy it. So I just changed my mind. I think I absolutely would. I think I absolutely would. Deuce Knight, I love this kid. He's on Twitter. Follow him. If he had a Deuce Knight Shamrock shirt,
sell a million t-shirts, if they sell 5 t-shirts,
right,
whatever.
They should be allowed
to. Let them do it. I have no problem with that, especially with what we're seeing now in college. I think that's unfair.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, finally, I think this is unfair.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I can't believe this.
You know, this is kind of echoing something we talked about maybe last week. I told you I watched that new Twisters movie. It wasn't the sequel. It was the remake. I guess, a reboot.
Reboot.
It was terrible. It was not good. And, apparently we're just out of ideas, and we're just going
to... Yeah, Ben.
We've been
here
for a while.
Here's Cornstar from Ben and Woods.
Yeah, we'll make our own Cornstar. So I got a new movie coming out. It is a remake of the 1987 classic. La Bamba.
La Bamba.
They are remaking La Bamba.
La Bamba was a good movie.
La Bamba was a brilliant film.
Yeah.
Brilliant film.
Is that Lou Diamond Phillips?
Why aren't we just leaving this alone to stand on its own 2 feet as a really brilliant film? Isai Morales as Bob, one of the best characters I've ever seen, ever in my life. Not my first, or my last.
Variety had a story yesterday. Mucho Mas Media and Sony Pictures have teamed up to develop a remake of La Bamba based on the life of rock and roll legend Richie Valens.
I'm going to watch it. I will absolutely watch it.
The new one?
Yeah, because I want to see how bad it is. But it was such a good movie that you don't need to remake all of these. Also, is there such a fervor for Richie Valens and the Big Bopper and all of that? Is there such a fervor now in 2024?
I'm curious which band is going to play the music.
Because remember, Los Lobos
killed it when they took the mantle of having to play La Bamba for the movie. And it made the song popular all over again. What was that, late 1980s when that came out?
85, Paulie said. 84?
85?
87.
87.
Oh, 87.
Yeah. So now you're going to need a new band to be the new Los Lobos that plays the song again for the new La Bamba movie.
And it's
Luis Valdez, he was the writer and director of the original movie.
Okay.
He's on as an EP for the new one. I have Oscar-nominated writer Jose Rivera write the script.
A new spin, maybe a modernized.
That's about all we know. Don't know when, don't know who's starring in it. I would imagine Glenn Powell, since he's in every sequel.
Glenn Powell is in it as Bob. You got screwed, blued, and tattooed. I was a kid. It came out in 87. I was 12.
That was -3.
It came out, and I was 12 years old. And when Bob, his brother, came on the scene, I was like, whew, that guy's as edgy can be. Starting fights at the dance. I mean, taking him down to TJ, like, it's the spirit journey he goes on. I mean, it's such a great, great movie. I'm going to show my kids that movie, like, this weekend. It's so good.
People got mad yesterday when I spoiled the end of season 3 of Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
if they haven't seen it yet, am I going to spoil La Bamba's ending?
And the plane crashes. They all
see now. Woods, you just gave
it's
it
the
away.
The day the music dies.
Everybody dies.
Yeah,
at the end of La Bamba.
You know who didn't get on that plane?
There was someone, right?
Yeah.
Who? Someone.
Waylon Jennings.
Wow.
Waylon Jennings was supposed to be on that plane, and I think he was ill.
So he's the Big Bopper.
Yeah, Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly.
And Richie Valens.
And Richie Valens.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. Brutal day for the music world. The day the music died. And Richie Valens, the movie about him not wanting to fly and being afraid of flying and all that, it was all real. And, Waylon, I think he was ill or gave. Oh, no. They did the coin flip thing.
In the movie.
In the movie.
Yeah.
And that's really what happened. They lost the flip. And he's like, damn it. All right, I'll ride the bus. Waylon Jennings. We would have been deprived of Waylon Jennings for all that time like we were the rest of those three guys. So, all right. I'm going to watch it. I'll see what happens.
Okay.
Maybe I do have a fervor for La Bamba in 2025.
And that's our Rindle report for a Tuesday.
This is going to be Carry On My Wayward Son. There'll be truth when you are gone.
I know what that means. I know what that means. That's our sounder. Yeah, if you were paying attention earlier, now's the time to call 833-288-0973. Your chance to win tickets to Kansas at Humphreys on September 22nd. Paulie will answer those calls during the break. I had like a lot of Twitter interaction the last couple of days after an idea, and I have no idea how serious this idea was floated, about a major sporting event coming to San Diego. Did you see this?
I saw some people were mad at you.
Some people agreed with me.
Yeah,
but,
this is interesting.
I will bring that up when we come back with Bennett Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
Fantasy freaks and geeks. What's cracking? It's your boy, James Kell, back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week, and man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need. Season-long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know some of you are going to be mad about this, but this contest was conducted fairly and equitably. And Diesel called in and won the Kansas tickets.
Paul, he also got made in. Diesel a mod in our chat yesterday.
But he's unpaid. He's not an employee of Odyssey. He's fully eligible to win, and he's the one who called in successfully and won. It would really be unfair not to give him the tickets. He was the rightful winner.
Yeah, he was
of the
right winner.
And there was no reason to exclude him from the prize. We didn't give him any favorable treatment. I mean, you did, making him a moderator, but that doesn't count with this.
I asked the dictator. I'm like, should we just make him a mod?
Small break. I said, go ahead. I like to empower my people to make their own decisions.
We'll keep listening to the sounder. We'll have another pair of tickets to Kansas to give away tomorrow to Humphreys. You can get your own tickets, of course, to Kansas at Humphreys at Ticketmaster.com. Speaking of tickets and events coming to San Diego, so I saw this tweet over the weekend from Adam Stern. He's a motorsports reporter for Sports Business Journal. It says San Diego has emerged as one of the cities where NASCAR is interested in hosting a future street race, per sources, as the sanctioning body continues to explore the concept across America.
All right, so
like a F1 Vegas?
Yes. So I saw your reaction, and I saw yours on Twitter. Vegas and San Diego are not the same. We could do this and make it incredible and cool. Again, not an F1 guy, not a racing guy.
Vegas looked incredible and cool.
But the stories that you told when you came back from the locals, the cab drivers,
every
the Uber drivers.
Person was
they were
like,
get this is a nightmare.
Out of here.
So I think, but you do that and you learn from it, right? And learn not to make the same mistakes. I personally think it would be awesome. I think it would be awesome, awesome, awesome. It looks cool. It sounds cool. This is a great city. We don't get enough attention, as far as I'm concerned. So I think now that I say that,
can they race over the Coronado Bridge? Because that would look
Would look really cool.
That would look really cool.
And I do understand this. I also say this from the perspective of someone who lives somewhere that is nowhere close to where any of this is happening. Right. I will not be inconvenienced in the slightest.
That was my biggest concern. I kind of said hard pass. I want to keep an open mind because there were some people who responded to me and said, it won't be like Formula One. They had to close down the strip for months to like repave it, make it okay for open wheel racing. This is different. These are stock cars. These are NASCAR.
It's not F1.
This is NASCAR.
NASCAR.
And they said it won't be nearly as involved in terms of what they have to do. Obviously, they'll have to shut down some streets for a couple of days to set up the course, and like they do with the Rock and Roll Marathon and everything. But we get through that, okay?
Yeah, you get through.
So I want to try to keep an open mind, but I'm really curious as to what San Diego really feels about this. There are NASCAR fans here, obviously. The home of Jimmy Johnson, who is one of the legendary kings of the sport, 7-time NASCAR Cup champion from San Diego. We've never had a race, obviously. The closest was Fontana, which they don't do anymore. So Southern California has really been cut out of the circuit. But I know tons of people who would go up every year, went up to that race in Fontana and are big fans. And I just don't know. Would there be a lot of interest if a NASCAR street race? Now, some of the NASCAR fans go, but the street racing is kind of boring. It's not like F1. It's better on an oval than it is on the street races. Those tend to be not great races. They've done this in Chicago the last couple of years. Apparently, it didn't make them a ton of money, so they're kind of looking at other cities to potentially explore as street racing venues.
So this is the funny part. So the NASCAR fans that literally will sit in the stands and watch these dudes drive in circles for hours say that a street race is too boring?
Apparently.
Too many turns?
Somebody make me understand.
Not enough passing.
I just want to understand that. Because I've been to NASCAR race. It's loud. It's fun. Because I had a 24-pack of Coors Light in the stands and our shirts off.
Did they just give them to you as you walk in?
You got your ticket. Here's your case of beer. No, you just bring your own beer. We had a blast. It was one of the better days I can remember. But after a while, it's a bit tedious, I'd say, a little monotonous. But I think, you know, those people would say watching a baseball game is tedious.
So nothing in the story said, like, where exactly they would want to put the course. I would think, I mean, somewhere in the city, like...
Yeah, it would be like the
downtown, Harbor Drive. I mean, where are we thinking that we're going to put this race?
Again.
What are we shutting down? for how long, what time of year is it? There's a lot of unknown details that you just give me some trepidation before we just jump into this thing.
Like I said, won't inconvenience me in the slightest. It's easy for me to say. I'm not saying to be a jerk. I'm saying it's easy for me to sit in here and go, yes, that's good for the city, more eyes on San Diego, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, man, I mean, if you live downtown or something, you're like, all right. Like, if it's downtown, you're like, whew. And, you know, like you said, you have to put up with it with the Rock and Roll Marathon and all the other things they shut it down for. But I think it would look pretty cool. And it, you know, obviously being here, living here, I'd watch the hell out of it, wouldn't you guys? You'd finally get me to sit down and watch a race.
Hey, I've driven on that street. Hey, I've driven on that street. Yeah, I know that corner. Yeah. I had parallel parks there once.
So good.
Jay in the chat says, let's get Kelly Danick's thoughts on this.
He also says, Bennewitz pace car. Oh, I like that idea.
Another idiot just spun out. Fifth in the ladder.
She should broadcast that.
The ladder in the roads on this NASCAR race.
She should absolutely be the broadcaster for it.
Idiot left the checkered flag.
That's great. All right. Well, I want to know more about it, certainly.
Yeah.
But I
don't think this would be until at least 2026 if it did happen.
All right. Yeah, that's not promised to any of us, so maybe we just relax.
Anyway, I was surprised at the amount of passion, though, that I got in terms of the responses, both pro and con, for a potential NASCAR street race in San Diego.
This is when we should have touched base with Italian Paul, who loves racing more than anything in the world. He said he sent me the story. And said, if only I was doing the show tomorrow. And had he done the show tomorrow, he would have done 20 minutes on this race. So,
oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
The Italian Reindl Paul report would have been all about this NASCAR race maybe coming to San Diego.
Yeah. F1, I think it would be really cool, but if you don't have the... I don't know why. I mean, that looked cool in Vegas. I know it was a nightmare
for them. I'm curious to see how it goes round two in a couple months.
I always get the sense that there's like almost zero overlap between F1 fans and NASCAR fans.
Zero, right?
Like,
you're one or the other.
None at all. Like, F1 fans are wine and cheese. And I mean, it is absolutely like, you know, it's like America's Cup fans. You have to be super rich to be interested and involved in F1. I mean, they have fans, obviously. And then NASCAR is the complete other way. As you said, 24-pack of Coors Light, shirts off, in the sun, and enjoying Porn Star on the radio. Plot twist. It begins on Highway 101 in Encinitas. How do you like that?
Yeah.
You like that idea?
You know what? I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I'm not going to be a NIMBY. I'm not going to be a NIMBY. Is it good for you? Is it good for the city? Great.
I don't know if it is or not.
I think it'd be awesome.
Is it bringing in tourists? I have no idea.
Don't we like tourists sometimes?
We do.
Right.
We do.
So, I don't know. I'm in. Let's do it.
Woods is in. NASCAR race in San Diego. All right, we'll come back. Final segment of Ben and Woods coming up. Take a look at today's matchup. Can the Padres make it 3 straight wins? Open their road trip with back-to-back victories in St. Louis. We'll talk about that coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Sour 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by Express Employment Professionals. If your supply chain demands a flexible workforce, hire with Express Employment Professionals. With contract and full-time workers from Express Employment, you get the staff you need and manage contingent labor costs. Learn more at expresspros.com. That's expresspros.com. I have a question for both of you, and you can think about it for a second while we check traffic. But the question is, have either of you ever been cut from like a sports team that you were trying out for?
Oof. All right.
Answer that when we come back here on 97.3 The Fan. So I bring up the question because today is the day that NFL rosters are being reduced from 90 to 53, which is they used to do it in stages. Now it's all one day. Multiply that by 32 teams. There's nearly 1,000 people who are going to be cut from their NFL teams today.
I had no idea they did that. I thought it was still week by week.
No, it's just 90 to 53, and today's the day. You got to set your roster. Now, a lot of them will be signed to practice squads, whatever. But for many of them, the dream ends today. And I was wondering if either of you guys ever had the experience of, like, trying out, and a coach had to tell you, you didn't make the squad.
It did happen to me, and it was devastating.
It's a bad feeling.
Played freshman year of high school, made the team, right? JV, right, as a freshman. All right, we got a radio show going on in here.
Pal. You're the one who gets hot.
It's
100
degrees
the door.
In
it's
here.
Not.
I don't know what to tell
it's
you.
Just
it's
you.
100 degrees in
it's
this room.
Plenty cool in here.
Adam walking by giving a tour to Braden, who works here, so I don't have any idea. Here's the studio. That's a morning show on right now. God. So I make the team. Make the team as a freshman. And then, so we had two things you could do after your freshman year. You could go play American Legion Bowl, or you could play, like, City Bowl, where, you know, your parents stroke $150 and you just go play in the City League against your buddies. American Legion Bowl was where the real G's played. I mean, like, they had the sickest uniforms, they traveled a little bit, and I remember going out for Legion Bowl with a bunch of my high school buddies, and I remember having the worst tryout that a human being could have.
Oh, no.
Like,
ooh.
Willie Mays Hayes fouling the ball straight up into the cage, and then you do that twice, and the meltdown comes. You're like, oh, my God, I can't hit. Booted a couple balls at third, you know, didn't pitch well off the mound, and I didn't make the team. And really, they only took, like, two or three guys, and the real G's on our team made it, and I didn't. I had to go play City Ball, and I was devastated. Devastated. It made me work my ass off that summer, and I went to a baseball camp and came back and had a monster sophomore season, and then we moved my junior year, and so I was kind of screwed. But I'll never forget that feeling. Yeah, Johnny asked if I got the yips. Yeah, man. I mean, I 100% did. Dude, the funny thing is, I can remember it like it was yesterday, and I'm probably, how old am I? 12, 13? I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the feeling of
36 years later.
I remember getting in the box and feeling fairly confident, you know, missing the first couple or fouling the first couple off, and then just having a terrible, terrible approach to hitting, and I just got domed out, man, and I was a wreck, and it was a really bad feeling.
I almost certainly should have been cut from my 7th and 8th grade basketball teams because I was not very good, but they always had a spot at the end of the bench for me to play and just kind of sit there and be
there
at
practice.
How many minutes
did you get? That's
in the season?
Thing.
Like per game?
Yeah.
Like three.
Three a game?
If it was a blowout going at the end. I had my one game, 8th grade. We were way ahead. So I got in. I got to play like 10 to 15 minutes at
nice.
The end. And I think I scored like 7 points.
Look at
and it was
you.
Like,
yeah. Seven.
That was like my
bad.
Career high. It was my
seven.
Best game ever.
It's probably more than I ever scored in YMCA ball, man.
But I don't think I was ever cut. I didn't make
best
all I didn't make All-Stars
won.
In Little League, but there was not like a tryout
I didn't
for that.
Either.
I just found out I didn't make it. I expected to make it, and that was devastating that year.
Literally, the first All-Star game I ever made was an adult ball All-Star game. I'm not joking. The first one I never made. I was such a bad player growing up because I didn't get started when I was 10. And I'd never thrown a ball, caught a ball, hit a ball. I was 10 years old. I'm way behind the eight ball there. Yeah.
At least it wasn't aware. Was I the tallest kid? No. In 7th and 8th grade, I was on the shorter side on my team. Yeah, I played guard with no ball handling or shooting skills.
That's really what you look for in a guard.
I'm actually surprised you. I'm shocked you weren't cut then.
Yeah, me too.
Paulie, you ever get cut or not make a team?
No, I never got cut. My school, my high school at least, we had so many, you know, varsity, JV, and freshmen. So you kind of already knew. It was like,
you know where your role
you
is.
You show up to tryouts, like you kind of knew where, like, yes, of course.
You're being assigned somewhere.
The elite freshman could make it to JV or even varsity.
I remember a kid on our JV team, two kids got called up to varsity. And that was devastating. Like that, like our freshman year, our season's over. Two kids are like, hey, we're going to bring so-and-so.
Yeah,
and you're like,
saying,
you guys are going to varsity? You're like, oh, my God. You couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and they just get to suit up.
They suit up
and
barely play.
It.
But, yeah, right. I wasn't one of those
guys.
So,
like, you know, you knew as a freshman. You're like, cool, I'm just going to be on the freshman team or whatever. There was the only – I quit baseball my senior year. I didn't like the coach. Didn't have any friends on the team anymore. They were all older and graduated. So I gave up baseball my senior year. I played tennis. And I used to just kind of hit the ball around with my friends on the side, I had a couple friends that were pretty good, and I just decided to pick up a racket like a week before tryouts, and I tried out, and they said, like, as a senior even, if you don't make varsity, you can play on JV. And I'm like, I ain't doing that. I'm not gonna.
Oh, really?
I'm not gonna be a senior on JV.
Really? Even though you'd never played before,
I think that'd be cool. So I made varsity. I played doubles.
That's amazing.
And it was actually a ton of fun. I was like, I should have just done this all 4 years. Like, it was a blast. But that was like the real nervous. Like, you got to go into school early the next morning after tryouts. And go to the locker room.
The sheet
is printed on the door. You can see it, and you're just walking down the hall, and it's like, dude, even if I was, whether I was confident or not, you were terrified.
That day, I remember calling my dad. He was at work, and I go, I made the team. And I had that moment of pride. You know, he seen me working hard to make the JV team. Took me out. We went to Chinese dinner. These are moments. I mean, you're talking years and years ago. I don't remember what we did on the show yesterday. Gun to my head. Those moments have stuck with me forever. And, you know, look, I think it's important, like, that to go through that.
Now,
because
I will say,
it really motivated me to get better. It really did.
Like, I've been on the other end of the cuts. I coached high school baseball for 6 years at Grossmont.
Cutting kids is tough.
We got a pretty good freshman class every year. I coached the freshman team.
Yeah. And,
dude, I mean, Joe was just getting into the big leagues then, and all the kids from middle school in that area wanted to play at Grossmont. It was either Grossmont or Granite, and then a little bit of Helix. But I got good ball players every year, man.
Did you?
And I'd get like 30 kids, and I would have loved – my coach, the varsity coach told me, keep as many as you can.
Yeah, of course.
Because we don't want them to lose interest, even if they're not going to play much. But, dude, I had to cut a couple of kids. I'm like, it's a safety issue. You're going to get hurt,
yeah,
or you're going to hurt somebody else.
You got no business. Did you guys ever have
– And those kids start crying, man.
Did you? We had one. He didn't make the team. I remember his name was John. And he didn't make the team. And his dad, the next day, was in the coach's office. Okay. And then it was, John's going to help out at practice and do that bit.
Oh,
and I said to myself, even in you know, as a freshman in high school, I said to myself, that's not right. Like, he didn't make the team, but he's out here. And I was like, I liked the guy well enough. But it was also like, bro, your dad went in and campaigned for you to be here. How do you go?
Now, did he ever get into games or anything?
No, he wasn't on the team.
He's willing to put in work and be there and help the team. Then I don't have a problem with that.
It was just really weird, man. And there's so many politics involved with it. There still is. But, you know, I think that's good for kids to remember that trauma.
Brandon wants to know, Ben, how did you do with the golf team? In high school at Torrey Pines, I kind of made the team, but I was on the B team because we had so many good golfers.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, there would be matches. It's like the non-travel squad. But we'd occasionally play against some of the lower level teams because they didn't need their best players every time. And then in college, my tryout was like 1-9 hole. They were so desperate for players, I didn't even know they
could. I have made it.
You might have actually. They were so desperate. I was in borrowed shoes and borrowed clubs, and I shot a 42. And they go, "Oh, you're on the team. You are on the team." I go, "Oh, cool."
My high school golf team had like 3 guys on it. You had
no idea that I could play college golf.
All right,
yeah, you can.
College golfer.
Look at me, college golfer. All of a sudden, I didn't even have a golf shirt with me. I had to buy one at Golf.
Now that don't lie to me.
I know. No, freshman year in college, all I had was t-shirts, and I was like, I need to buy a golf shirt. To go try out for the golf team and borrowed shoes and clubs.
That's amazing. Look at you now.
And there, look at me now.
Playing club championships at the GOAT.
Not well, though, still. tonight, Padres, well,
let's go.
Late afternoon, early evening matchup. Game 2 of 4 against the St. Louis Cardinals. 3:45 EcoWater SoCal pregame show. Welcome back, Sammy Levitt, today. 4:45 first pitch. Dylan Cease on the mound. He's certainly not been bad. But he's coming off lost 2 of his last 3 starts.
Uneven a little bit.
I mean, he's given up 2 earned runs.
Yeah. That's pretty.
I mean, it's not bad.
No,
you know,
not at all.
Yeah, the 1-inning start to start his month. So he's got a 3.5 ERA. Ted's given up 4 unearned runs, but obviously, you know, defense has let him down a couple of times. Had 5 walks 2 starts ago. That was against the Rockies. He won that one.
Won that game.
You know, looking for him to kind of maybe lock back in with one of those starts we saw in August when he was going through the dominant run that included the no-hitter. He will be pitching against Miles Michaelis, former Padres farmhand from long ago. Had a pretty mediocre season this year with an ERA over 5 for the St. Louis Cardinals and a team that feels like they're on the brink of give him the nudge and push him off the cliff. Like, they are, the fans have turned on them, as we heard, you know, kind of Jesse talking about it. I heard with Annie yesterday, Derek Gould, who covers the team, talking about just, you know, the struggles right now in St. Louis. This is a team you want to take advantage of at the moment. You've got them kind of staggering. Go ahead. Knockout punch the next 3 days. Take three of four or even all four. And he was pointed out, Padres have now won two in a row with Martin Perez and Randy Vasquez.
Yeah, buddy.
They now have Dylan Cease, Joe Musgrove, and Michael King the next 3 days. Should all, you know, give you a great chance to win any or all of these next three games of this series coming up. So we'll see how it goes tonight.
He's coming off his best start in Michaelis, probably his best start of the year. He pitched against the Brewers, who are really, really good. Six innings, two hits, no earned runs. Benny, one walk, three Ks, brought his ERA down to 5.19 as it sits right now. But, yeah, man, I mean, look, you look through his starts, he's 3, 4, 5 runs a game. So get to them early. You got first licks. Go get them.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. to talk all about it. Annie and Elston coming up next. For Paul Reindel, Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. From all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long.
Fantasy freaks and geeks. What's cracking? It's your boy, James Coe, back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week, and man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need. Season-long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.